Very
Thanks
good,
so
very
much.
Good.
Thanks for your patience.
Thank you for waiting.
I'm here again with Dan Launing, the co-founder and CTO of Meetable. And Dan, I want you to tell us what exactly Meetable is, how it's made, the science behind this.
Amazing. Yes, thank you for having me on. Thank you for being here. So my background is in cell molecular biology and tissue engineering. Seems like a mouthful, but at least I understand how cells work. And this is really the basis of what my company is built on. So Meetable is using animal cells. So this is not plant-based. This is actual cells from animals. We take just a very small fraction of them. And what we do is that we stimulate them to expand. This is what cells do. Currently, you're expanding, you're growing, your cells are growing. And we're using this capability of these cells to make more of them and eventually turn them into muscle and fat. So the product that we'll eventually be making is 100% real delicious meat, but without killing a single animal ever again. Thank you. Appreciate it.
But what's the market for this? You were talking about the market for meat and how you're just a drop in the ocean, almost literally. It's huge. It's massive. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we are targeting meat eaters. So this is not for vegans. This is not for vegetarians. This is for people that eat meat on a daily basis. And this is still enormous amounts. Only in the Netherlands, where I'm from, we eat about 2.5 million kilograms of meat every day. The global meat market is $1.5 trillion with 3.6% growth. So this is what we're targeting, which is pretty overwhelming, right? We're just a startup, we're 90 people now, making a first product entry in Singapore next year, but this will be small market entry, and then afterwards, by scaling and getting market traction, we hopefully eventually will have a significant stake in the global meat market.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, terrible joke.
But when you talk about the market, who are your buyers? You said meat eaters. Why would a meat eater want to, who has no problem killing the animals, they like to eat meat, why would they want to eat your product?
So the killing of the animal parts is also not for me the biggest value of what I'm doing, but it's also the reduction in resources and the effect of the climate that you can do. So cows and pigs produce a lot of methane and ammonia, use a lot of antibiotics. And with our method of producing meat, you don't need any of that anymore. You can reduce the greenhouse gas emission for a burger with almost 90%. A normal beef burger takes about 15,000 liters of water to make 1 kilogram of it. And with our case, we can cut that back with 90%. So we will be much more sustainable. So people that are caring about that aspect of what goes into their food, this is a product for them for sure.
And you said most of your customers are businesses?
No, eventually we're thinking about making a consumer brand. There's nobody that can tell the story like we do. That's why I'm here on stage. That's why I'm trying to tell you what we're doing. I wouldn't trust another company doing as good of a job as I do because I live it. I do work on it every day. I know exactly how it works. So to get consumers over the initial hesitancy that we see happening, I think it's my moral obligation to talk to people and explain why this is as good as a normal product, but then without killing animals. And as a meat eater myself, they should also start eating this if they care about the environment.
But what about the cost? I mean, meat is cheap. There's no way around that. Emerging markets, China, all South America, people are becoming richer. How is that impacting your product?
It's very interesting. I actually wouldn't say meat is cheap. Meat is made cheap. So government subsidies, no actual cost on the climate effects. I understand because, you know, you want, as a government, you want your people to eat affordable, healthy food. So you subsidize the most critical parts of it. But this is, of course, not fair for us. We're competing with that. And our prices will, in the beginning, will be significantly higher. And it's also because we're at a scale where all the cost of goods and the infrastructure still need to be set up. And this has a cost to eventually the production process. There are three things that are critical to make consumers step over the boundaries and start consuming this product. One is taste. If it's disgusting, nobody will eat it, clear as day. Availability. If it isn't available at a local supermarket where you'll encounter it, nobody will have the opportunity to buy it. And the third one is cost. Nobody's going to eat a $50 burger. And that's what we're all about. We want to make an impact. We want to make sure that enough people have access to this product for an affordable price so that we will significantly reduce the amount of animals that we need on this planet.
But how are you going to do that? Because it is expensive. How much does a burger cost?
So right now we're making dumplings, and it's about $40 per dumpling. So it's a pretty expensive, probably the most expensive dumpling that you ever made. But we're doing this at a very small scale right now. We're thinking about kilograms a month. So now that we're moving to Singapore, we're collaborating with a local producer there. We are already moving to 500 liter fermentation capacity, and then afterward to 10,000 liters. So you can see with that scale, also the economy of scale helps us with reducing the cost and optimizing the process that eventually a dumpling will cost as much as you can buy in the local supermarket right now. And this will happen in the next 5 to 10 years.
5 to 10 years, do you have that time? The economy of scale, you're racing against inflation, the Fed is raising rates, the BOE is raising rates, and inflation's out of control, the economy is tanking. How are you going to race against that 5 and 10 years and the economy?
I think actually this will work for us. So
really?
Meat, yes. So I think meat will become substantially more expensive over time. And it's a very strange logic, but you cannot innovate on a cow. You cannot make it produce more protein or produce less greenhouse gas emissions, but we can. With our unique process, we can intervene and really think about what are the stuff that goes in, how can we optimize it, what type of energy sources do we want to use, how can we make the conversion of the food that we give to cells as efficient as possible. This is all possible with this new method of producing meat compared to a cow, and therefore we can substantially lower costs over time, while the cost of meat will steadily grow over time.
And so what hurdles are you also seeing when it comes to adoption, when it comes to cultural aspect, the ick factor? Tell me more about that.
Actually, what we've been seeing happening is that since I worked on the very first hamburger in 2013, we saw a lot of skepticism, a lot of hesitancy about this new technology. But in the 9 years I've been doing this, people have become aware of the impact that their food has on this planet. And also the mind change accompanying that has been startling. It is crazy. I'm sitting here at Web Summit. 70,000 people are here. You are here listening to what I have to say. Previously, it was torches and pitchforks, but now it's a red carpet treatment. People understand what's happening in the world when it comes to their impact with their food. And presenting an alternative, which I think you should be doing, provide an alternative that still fills the needs of people when it comes to the food that they desire, but then provide something that doesn't have the cost on the climate. So only if we have what we see now in a bit younger generations, 50% willing to try, a little bit more or definitely want to try, thinking about 2.5 million kilograms, that is enough for us to sustain ourselves, to grow organically and get more people excited over time.
And can you talk about the difference between plant-based alternatives? You said you're going after meat eaters. What about vegetarians?
It's more a philosophy stance. Why don't you eat meat? Is it because you don't like the taste? Then sorry, we're making real meat. This is not a product for you. If you care about animal welfare and about climate, yeah, then you probably might be able to eat this. And if you're then still a vegetarian, I think that's up to them to decide where is the boundary for that. What makes you a vegetarian? Is it only actually the animal component of it, or is it actually the impact that it has on the planet? So this is really a thing that I think vegetarians should start thinking about, because it's a new category of products that they haven't encountered before.
But do you consider the Beyond Meats of the world, or people who make insects and those types of foods, alternative protein sources, do you consider them competitors?
I would consider them colleagues. We don't have the luxury to pick one over the other. We have to do everything. We have to do everything to make sure that we don't eat ourselves to death in the coming decades. So it's ants eating less meat, because as a European Union, we eat too much meat. It's about 67 kilograms per person per year. That's a lot. Nothing compared, of course, to America. That's about 120 kilograms per person per year. But what you can see happening in developing countries, that they're now on the low spectrum of like 17 kilograms per person per year, but rapidly increasing that number. So providing them with an alternative is going to be more sustainable is, I think, what we should be doing. And that's what we're trying to do, making a more sustainable product that they can still eat meat and also have more alternative than just either a plant product or a beef product. So it's really, for me, and eat less meat, and have more plant-based alternatives, and have cultivated proteins in any form whatsoever, maybe even insects if Europe ever is ever ready for that. But it's all these options. I think the best comparison for this is the energy market. It's not only solar, it's not only wind, it's not only nuclear, it's the entire package that makes it resilient. And especially when you think about food, you have to make a system that is resilient. Because if something happens and it disrupts one of the systems, you have backups. And with food, that is very important.
And tell me about, you know what, when you first introduced yourself to me, it made me think of, maybe the cultural hurdles when it comes to screw tops on wine or the sous vide aspect. Tell me about you talked about pitchforks. Tell me about that growth or how people have come to accept it. Is it just age and demographics?
You have seen a trend that younger people are more open for new ideas. I don't think that's rocket science, right? Usually that's the case in any generation. If you go 50 years back, you would see the same pattern emerging. Younger people are more open to new things because they are not already set in a specific mindset. Mm-hmm. But still, even among the boomer generation, we've seen 39% that are open for this. Food is so unique. It's such a unique product by itself. It's so cultural, so emotional. People have an identity when it comes around food, either vegan, vegetarian, pescatarian, whatever-tarian you have nowadays. So playing with that and trying to demonstrate value with the products you're making to specific groups, I think allows us to navigate the story that we're telling and get people excited on the things that they care about. So some people care about putting a delicious meal on the table. Doesn't matter where it comes from. Some people want to provide an alternative so that they don't harm the planet. This is something that we can play. So it's really different messages for different audiences. But the good thing about this method is that it touches upon all of these aspects, about climate, about animal welfare, about just the experience of eating, which is very specific. It's all of it. So that's why I'm so privileged to be working on such a field that can have such an impact on this planet and just one aspect of it.
So tell me about the investment landscape and the growth opportunities that you see for both your business and the market in general. If you could go back to how big this market is, and the opportunity's big, but on the other hand, so is the competition from traditional sources.
Well, traditional sources see that they're reaching a maximum capacity. It's just almost nearly impossible to put more animals. We rear 60 billion animals every year. We can't take more animals. A third of all agricultural land is being used to feed animals, while we can also use that to feed people, which we should be doing anyway. And it's so multifaceted. I don't even know where to start on this question because, again, it's an and situation. It's so interesting to see how the future might develop that right now, when we're so small and we're just raising millions of euros to start building the company and doing the scaling, that it's just humbling to see where this can go in the next couple of years.
Can you talk more about the science behind how the products are actually made? You're the CTO. What does your job look like? What does your day look like? Is this a new type of job for a lot of talent to come into?
Yeah, that's one for sure. So we were very lucky. We convinced the Dutch government to invest 60 million euros in this field, not for us, but for the entire field by itself. It's called the National Grow Fund, if you're interested. But it's more about education. It's more about science and technology development and shared scale-up facilities. Because right now, we are taking people from adjacent studies, like cell biology, bioprocess engineering, tissue engineering, and we have to re-educate them to think about their knowledge that they have, but then apply it to food. Because the first thing that people teach you when you're going to a cell biology lab is, don't put anything from the lab in your mouth. And they come at Meatable and we say, put this in your mouth. And it's so counterintuitive. So we have to do a lot of work to get them accustomed, also about the price, also about the edibility. But it's very interesting, but we're also very happy that we see now government supporting us. Because it's strange, right? You can go to university and study petrochemical engineering to help the oil industry, but you cannot have a course on cultivated meat. Why wouldn't we need the help from young new talent to attract them to our company? And this is part, of course, what I've been doing as well. I've been going around universities, talking about the science, and inspiring young talent to see how their education can support something good and join the company for us to use their talent for something that actually matters in this world. So my role is very diverse. I don't know if CTO is actually a good title anymore. I'm pitching to my co-founder to rebrand a little bit, and it's a bit weird. So I said CWO, and it will be Chief Whatever Officer, because I'm doing literally whatever is needed: hiring people, setting up labs, fundraising, university talks. It is everything. So that's why it's so diverse, and that's why I love doing it, because I can see all the aspects of building a company from scratch, which is a unique experience.
And tell me about the fundraising aspect. Are most of your investors institutional? Are they retail? How's that working out?
So we started with more generalistic VCs, because what you saw happening is that biotech VCs are not accustomed to our end market. Usually it's either pharma or any medicine, and they're like, oh, food is very strange for us. Or the food investors, they didn't understand the technology. So why do you use cells? Why not just animals, right? There was this huge gap in understanding. So I had to do a lot of education, but the generalists are more open to that, more flexible in that sense. So they got on board first. But now we see the big meat companies, Tyson Foods, Cargill, PHW Group, all chipping in, because I want to see what's going to happen, and I see their market being in peril and being under a lot of pressure. So they want to see if this is something that they can also participate in for the future. Right now, we are seeing bigger investors, so Temasek, Tencent, the big tier one investors coming in, because they see that the growth is there and that the potential is there. So they're also supporting right now, but it has been a tough ride, because if investors don't understand, they usually don't invest. It may be a bit provocative to say, but from my perspective, it seems that investors are idiots, but they're not stupid. They don't understand what we're doing. So I have to really start with, this is a cell. So you exist out of cells. We can grow cells, and we can actually turn this into food. And they're like, oh, really? It's like, yeah, really? And after a little bit of understanding, they then come in with people that actually do know, and I have an easier time talking to experts, because you do need a lot of background information. So I don't blame them, but it's very hard sometimes to explain exactly what we're doing and not getting confused with either the plant-based or the impossible burger or what have you of all the alternative proteins which are currently available.
I was interested in what you said with Tyson. I mean, it does remind me of what you said about energy. This is kind of an analogy to the energy market, and energy companies are investing in wind and solar, but it's a drop in the bucket in terms of what we need for our uses. Why would Tyson want to invest in its own disruptor and its own, make its own coffin, so to speak?
I think what they've learned, this type of organization, is either you disrupt or being disrupted, or you could be part of the disruption. So instead of seeing this industry coming up and watching from the sidelines on how this might potentially eat margins of your organization, why don't just invest in that margin that's going to replace it? So Tyson doesn't rear animals, right? They don't have farms, they just process the meat. Our process actually is more on the beginning part, so we create the meat and then making products out of it, transporting it, storing it. That is where Tyson has a lot of capacity for. So we are potentially a customer for them, and that's where they see the value. Instead of saying, oh yeah, we're going to replace you with the farmers, no, you will be not a customer in our portfolio.
Do you need those types of companies to get to the scale that you're talking about to make it cheaper?
I don't think Tyson will help with reducing costs. But we're not a meat transporting company. We're not a meat storage company. We're a meat producing company. So at the end of the value chain, there's where they can help us with distribution, storage, product development. But we need companies like DSM. I don't know if you're familiar. It's a Dutch biotech organization that is very familiar with large-scale fermentation. So using either yeast or other products to make food. And they've invested in our A round to support that development and the cost reduction. The biotech part is really where the understanding and the capabilities of cost reductions are coming from. But we also need the holistic supply chain of then, if you have products, to store them and distribute them all over the world. And maybe it's not like distributing with ships like we do now. For example, we slaughter animals in Argentina or Brazil and then transport them to Europe. Our technology would allow basically for producing inside of a city. We can do this in a skyscraper where they can produce locally, so you can increase shelf life, reduce the transportation cost that is needed, so giving a better value and more locally produced, healthier food for people.
We don't have much time left, but I'd love you to finish with what needs to happen in terms of this market to get it to the point where you are the Tyson size or huge on the stock market.
It will take a while. Building factories is expensive and takes time. And especially the size of this market is enormous. So the most thing that we need is financial support, time, and of course enthusiasm from people that are demanding different in the food that they're eating on a daily basis. If we have those three things, I'm sure that we're going to make it and that we're coming to market sooner than we're doing right now.
Is it going to be consumer driven? Is that what you're kind of saying?
I'm absolutely sure that it's going to be consumer driven.
Oh, interesting. Okay, well, that's all we have. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dan Lunyon.